Good morning. Happy Monday. Hope you have today off and are enjoying a four-day weekend. I don't know how it works for people with real jobs, how it happens with the holiday tomorrow and a work day today. Do people just go into work on Monday? Like, the Tim Hortons in the Rogers building was open today, which tells me people go to work.
Yes.
But this is a ghost town. Do normal people go to work today?
That's a great question. I mean, my wife doesn't have a normal job either, so I can't really ask her. I will say this. I Googled Canadian Tire just to see the hours of operation. Apparently, they're also open today.
Okay.
And if the Tim Hortons is open, that tells you a little bit of what you need to know. But then on the other hand, we have so many friends who are just at cottages right now and just made it this into
a natural spot to book your I'm going to use a vacation day here. You get a four-day weekend.
That might be
today. Entire being open makes sense. This is, I would imagine, it's a big weekend for dads to do like yard work and stuff.
Well, I take that as a compliment.
You went dad mode. It's Jays Talk Plus. It's Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz. We'll have some fun today. The Jays start a four-game series against the Yankees tonight down at Rogers Center. It's 7 o'clock tonight, Wednesday and Thursday, and then tomorrow it's a 3 p.m. game for the Canada Day holiday. Always one of the most fun games of the year, always a really good crowd, and the Yankees being here makes it a little juicier because both of those teams won 2 of 3 on the weekend, and so the American League East remains a three-game gap with Tampa Bay directly in the middle of the Jays and Yankees. You were working all weekend.
Yes.
How'd you feel about the weekend for the Blue Jays? Like, we can talk specifics after, but like generally, you take 2 of 3 on the road. The Red Sox kind of stink, but you took 2 of 3 on the road.
Yeah, it was a weird one, right? Not to steal John Schneider's favorite words here, but it was kind of weird. It was a weird series. The Blue Jays had sort of strayed away from maybe the ups and downs or the extremes that we had seen earlier in the season. They found some consistency, but that reared its head a little bit this
weekend. They found some extremes Friday and Saturday. Where this is, it's such a weird series where like each team just like completely punted a game, and then Sunday was like, it's like how I feel about this is a silly comparison, but in the NHL you get an extra point on the line if the game goes to overtime. So it's not, soccer does the smart thing, right? If you win in regulation, it's 3 points.
Right.
If you win in overtime, it's 1 point. So, or in a lot of formats anyway. But hockey, if you go to overtime, there's an extra point on the line. Instead of there being 2 points for a win and zero for a loss, there's 2 for a win and 1 for a loss.
Right.
So when you were playing a non-conference opponent, so imagine you were doing interleague play and this is how you did baseball, it would be in everyone's best interest for you to just sit there for 60 minutes and go to overtime. And this way, the average outcome for us is now 1.5 points instead of 1 point. We all gained half a point from that. That's how this series felt, where the Jays and Red Sox were just like, you know what? You take Friday.
Yeah.
We'll take Saturday. And then we'll just fight it out on Sunday for the series.
Yeah. And then the best team prevailed. And the Blue Jays are the better team when it comes to this matchup specifically.
At least when Walker Buehler's on the mound.
Yes. Continues to, you know, a little bit better maybe because he didn't walk 7 guys. But, you know, we kind of saw a little bit of the troubles that are ailing Walker Buehler this season for sure. But, yeah, it was just, it was strange in that way. It kind of took me back to earlier points of this season, and maybe I'm a little traumatized because I was like, okay, here we go again. But it's not here we go again, right? This team has done enough to prove that it can hang in there, it can play consistent, solid baseball for a longer stretch of time. And so I don't know, it was a 15-1 loss, and at the end of the day, Sho and I just looked at each other and we were like, we're not that worried about this. It was the chillest 15-1 loss the Blue Jays have handed us.
Yeah, and the fact that it was coming after a 9-0 victory the night before, where a position player pitched for the Red Sox, is very, it takes the pressure off a little bit, and you still have a chance to win a series on the road. It's also that game, both of those games kind of highlight. So we talk about run differential sometimes, and managers will reference run differential, analysts. It is a better predictor at this point in the season than your record of which way you're going. I think there should be a cap on how much each game can keep. Like, that game is, there's no difference really between a plus 14 and a plus 6, I don't think. Like, because once you pass a certain point, there is, like, you have completely changed the dynamic of the game, where John Schneider is not making substitutions with the goal of winning. You are throwing out things like small ball for a run. Stolen bases go way down in low leverage. You use a position player pitching. You know, Tyler Heineman allowed a run in that game. So I think there should be like a cap on, like in basketball, and I'm just going to tie every sport into
Let's do it. I love it.
I've done soccer, hockey, and basketball so far. I don't know how I'm going to work American football in, but I'll find a way. But in basketball, a lot of the stats, even like advanced stats, yes, but some of the even basic stats now, a lot of the sites will just automatically filter out garbage time so that if you're up 20 with 2 minutes left, the results of that are not, they happened and they contribute to your individual stats, but we don't care at all when we're talking about evaluating a team because it's the third stringer in there. Tyler Heineman is pitching. So maybe we need to look at that when we look at things like the Blue Jays don't have a very good run differential because they've had a couple stinkers like that.
Yeah, that's such a good point. And it seems like, you know, we spent maybe a couple of weeks talking about the 500 mark. And when are the Blue Jays going to just leave that mark behind them, get over the hump, however you want to phrase it. Maybe the run differential thing is the new 500 mark where...
Can they get to a positive run differential?
It's so clear that this team... Well, maybe it's not that clear, but in my mind, this team should have a positive run differential and kind of run with it. This is a winning team. It's a team that is going to the playoffs. It's just funny to me that, you know, when the Blue Jays are... on the right track, they win 9-0. Here we go. This is it. And then there's another setback. I agree with you. Maybe it's not that concerning. Maybe there are certain points in which you can look at it and take it with a bit of a grain of salt. But that is the one that I'm watching now and sort of keeping in mind, okay, when is the last time we are going to talk about the Blue Jays having a negative run differential?
It's also particularly notable heading into a series against the Yankees where the Yankees have not played their best baseball of late, but they have... like safely the best run differential in baseball, not just in the American League or the American League East. They have outscored opponents by 113 runs over 83 games. So, you know, closing in on a run and a half a game, that's by far first in baseball, or not by far, but like safely first in baseball.
Right.
So it'll be interesting. They are the run differential team. They are the team that, and we'll talk to Keith McPherson of WFAN at 11 o'clock about the state of the Yankees. They did win a series on the weekend, including a big double digit victory of their own against the Athletics. What was the final? 12-5 in that one. So they have turned the corner from that six-game losing streak. But big, big series here. And here's a fun one. The Angels are here this weekend.
Right.
And so look.
Also good for some reason.
We will. Joe Adell.
Yeah, for some reason.
What have I been saying? So this is also an interesting week because we will talk a lot about the division over the next couple of months. The Blue Jays are only 3 games back. That is the most important goal. If you can get to the top of the division, if you can get a bye through the first round, you will feel immensely better about your playoff chances. We know how the wild card series has gone for the Toronto Blue Jays over the last decade. It has not gone particularly good, particularly well since Edwin Encarnacion's walk-off in 2016. They are 0-6 in wild card games since. The Jays have managed to put a little bit of cushion between themselves and the wild card spot. So if you are, the division is important. But if you are just looking at playoff likelihood, they're now 4 games clear of the next team out in the wild card, which happens to be the Angels. So an opportunity throughout this week to gain ground in the division and maybe push one of the wild card competitors a little further out. Pretty big week.
It is a pretty big week. I think we do tend at times, and maybe I shouldn't say we, I should say I, to look at certain points in the season in a bit of a micro way. And I'm not saying that that is straight up a mistake, but it does leave out a lot, right? And we are at the halfway point. There's still a ton of baseball left to be played, but you kind of have to look at this week as a little bit bigger than just another week or a week to start July or whatever it is, because there are some really, really big opportunities just with the opponents and with where we are in the standings, like you said.
And look, I've said this before, 162 games all count equally at the end of the season.
Right.
There's no one game now is not more valuable. However, when it comes to determining paths and things like that, their games aren't created equal. The fact that the Blue Jays are in a playoff spot right now and 3 games back in the division versus where they were last year, even if you, this team is better than last year's, but let's say you thought they were the same. The sequencing of getting those wins earlier makes you a buyer at the trade deadline instead of a seller. If you are playing against a team like the Angels this week, a couple weeks out from the trade deadline, and they sweep you versus you sweep them, that's one extra seller in the market. We talked about this with the Diamondback series. Maybe this doesn't apply to the Blue Jays as much because they are like things would have to go really off the rails for the next 3 weeks for them to be sellers at the deadline. But there are 5 or 6 teams in baseball who are looking at these next 4 weeks, and they're very, very important in terms of the direction they're going to go. For the Blue Jays, it's probably pretty important from a from the standpoint of figuring out what your priority is going to be July 31st, we're going to talk to Ross Atkins down at the ballpark today. This is a regularly scheduled media availability for Atkins. He does those a couple times throughout the year. We'll probably start to get a sense of where things are looking for the deadline, but Max Scherzer and Eric Lauer are in the rotation. You know, what's the confidence level with that? And Bowden Francis and Alec Manoa as a late season kind of depth plan. Anthony Santander still hasn't picked up a bat.
Yeah.
How does that change maybe how they're feeling about one of the bench spots or even a starting spot? Ernie Clement's on pace for a 5-win season now. Have they just put aside the idea of third base reinforcements? Like these next couple weeks are, the games will count the same at the very end of the season, but there's a lot on the line directionally and roster building wise and in terms of buyers and sellers around baseball over these next 4 weeks. That's why July is one of the best months of the year.
Right. This isn't just us trying to move forward with a story or trying to push a narrative or whatever it may be. It's just that you kind of look at, and I know that these games don't actually count. If you win, it doesn't actually count as two wins, but it feels that way as well.
Yeah, if you're in a division, well, think about it. If you take all four, you're ahead of the Yankees.
If you
take two of four, you're right back where you started.
Exactly where you started. Yeah. So, yeah, this isn't really about that, right? But if you want to even focus on what is it that makes baseball beautiful, it's the ability to zoom in a little bit in those moments. And in the same way that I try to, you know, humanize players and not just look at them as just numbers, you can't really look at a series like this and not humanize it a little bit. Like, this is it. There's drama. There is going to be, I expect there to be, you know, friction and all of those things that we see against the Yankees on Canada Day, no less. It tends to be a time of, you know, just things happening and the story moving forward. And that is why we're here, basically.
Yeah, and guys will be more fired up because it's the end. Like, everyone knows what the stakes are. I remember very much the late 2023, the Rangers came here for a four set in August and the Jays got swept. And they were only four games and they still made the playoffs that year. But that series was like a giant flag in the ground. This team really doesn't have it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is early for that kind of series. But if you take three or four against the Yankees in this series and suddenly you're one game back in the division and you just won, like, that starts to feel like, okay, you have it. There's a confidence element to that. There's, again, when it comes to the trade deadline, are you a modest buyer if you're in a wild card spot? Are you an aggressive buyer if you're in the division lead come July 31st? Those things matter. And so there's a personal aspect to this. There's a front office aspect to this. It's a very, very fun week. And there's the Joe Adell of it all, where he is going to homer three times as the Blue Jays sweep on the weekend. Okay, I guess we should talk about, I know you had wanted to talk about that stuff in the second segment, but it just got up to, we should talk a little bit about the games that happened. So for anyone who missed it, Jays won 9-0 on Friday. They scored in five different innings. Everyone except Jonathan Clase got a hit. They went 7-for-17 with runners in scoring position. Jose Berríos was excellent. Again, 7 shutout innings with 8 strikeouts. Saturday rolls around. Chris Bassitt doesn't have it.
Yeah.
Goes two-plus innings, allows 8 earned runs. The Jays are down 9-1 in a hurry. Tyler Heineman has to pitch. They don't get a hit at all with runners in scoring position. And then Sunday was the real game,
right,
where the Jays win 5-3. First inning, Walker Buehler. Here you go, Addison Barger. Actually, not a tough pitch to homer in and low, but Barger gets to it for a homer. And then Vlad hits the no-doubter. Someone else pointed this out on Twitter, and I can't remember who, but every home run Vlad has ever hit at Fenway Park looks like the longest home run ever hit. I think it's because the wall's short, and it's the rare time he gets enough lift on them, but they all look massive. They get enough insurance runs that it doesn't really matter that Eric Lauer was just okay.
Yeah.
Bullpen was really good. Nice bounce back for Jeff Hoffman.
Very much so.
A lot of small positives. But in general, I think that's kind of like, that's the series you expect to have. You don't expect it 9-0 and 15-1, mm-hmm. but you took 2 of 3 against the Red Sox, felt pretty comfortably coming out of it. You're a better team. And there were some, you know, I think Bassitt would be a negative from that. But otherwise, you feel pretty good about things.
Yeah, the Bassitt thing was just so bizarre because we don't see that happen to him very often or, you know, at all, really. And the fact that he had dominated the Red Sox throughout his career up to this point is also puzzling. But it is one of those days. We all have those days, right? Like sometimes we sit here and we're like, what are we gonna talk about? Like, I'm tired or whatever it is, or I mispronounced Blake Murphy's name 6 times in one show. It happens.
Did it happen that many times when I was off?
It was probably like 3 times. it happens. And unfortunately, this time it happened to Chris Bassitt. The bats couldn't pick him up because honestly, even when it was 6-1 or whatever it was, it didn't really feel like the Blue Jays were out of it because of the way that they have been playing and because of the amount of comeback wins that we've seen, because of just the really good at-bats they have been able to string together in those situations to pick up their starters. It just, it was one of those days where no one actually had it. And what choice do you have when that's the case then to just punt it and look forward to tomorrow?
Yeah,
right?
Will Wagner, you're back up from the minors. Here's a couple plate appearances. Yeah, David Schneider, get in there and take a swing. Tyler Heineman, hit someone with a pitch.
Sure.
Let's get in there. The softest hit by a pitch of the season. Probably. I meant to look that up if it was the softest hit by a pitch of the major league season. By the way, in the second segment today, we're going to take some of your texts. I forgot to mention that off the top. So text us to 590, 590. Standard data and message rates may apply. How are you feeling about this team? How are you feeling headed into this series? The usual questions. I'm sure there will be lots about trades and the rotation and stuff like that. But text us 590, 590. We'll answer a bunch in the next segment. Chris Bassitt, by the way, I dug in a little bit more after. There's nothing really under the hood going on. Like the velocity, the spin rates, the movement, there was nothing outlier. Bassitt said either they had a good approach or I was tipping. I have a lot of respect for that organization, so I just kind of got to wear it. I got exposed. Mm-hmm. Move on.
Yeah.
There was nothing like no red flags really in terms of, oh, there was a drop off in this. He didn't throw this well. Some location issues. And then, he kind of got, he kind of just got single and double. I mean, there were a couple home runs in there. It just was a bad day.
It was a bad day, but he had been so strong throughout the month as well after somewhat of a shaky May that you can also look at, the sample from before this game and feel pretty confident that Bassitt is going to figure it out. I mean, he did try to maybe mix in some of the pitches that we haven't seen a ton of this year, through some more splitters or things of that nature, trying to just get out of it and build upon something. Couldn't do it. Comes out of the game in the third without recording an out. Mm-hmm. Braden Fisher put in a really difficult situation there, and then there's an error, and so the three runs that were in there also come in to score. Such a weird one. And the best way to sort of forget about that is to move on to the next one, right?
Yeah, and Bassitt will get a chance against the Yankees this week. So that's not an easy bounce back. The Yankees are fourth in the league in runs per game and second in weighted runs created plus. So pretty good. They put a 12 spot up on the Athletics yesterday. So we'll see. Let's say on the pitching side, Jeff Hoffman bounced back, which was nice. And I know we're kind of going rapid fire here, but there was no like overarching narrative from the weekend. They're just like Eric Lauer was okay. Not great. He was fastball heavy again. The cutter looked really good, but they were kind of on it a little bit.
Yeah.
And which again, to be expected, if the book on you is you're going to throw a lot of fastballs up in the zone. And then last time out, we saw him throw a bunch of breakers, but like you can't do that every time. If your fastball is your best pitch, you're going to have to go back to it a little bit more. But the bullpen really picked him up yesterday. Yariel Rodriguez with a really good outing. And then Jeff Hoffman bounced back. He faced three batters, struck them all out, only threw 14 pitches, only threw two fastballs.
I know. That was pretty fascinating. But the velocity was there, which is important.
Yeah, and I guess if they're going to swing and miss at every slider,
yes.
Why not?
And this is something that you and I have talked about, right? Like the slider looks so good, and it continued to look good even when he was struggling a bit. I was wrong. I proposed a couple of weeks ago that we discussed whether or not Hoffman should stay in this role. I was wrong. I think, you kind of look at the way things were going. Yes, the velocity was a little bit down, but we couldn't really explain what was wrong, and it may well have just been a bit of bad luck throughout a stretch.
A bit of bad luck, and there was also, there was like, okay, when he's overused a little bit more, the arm angle drops a little bit, and then the splitter gets ineffective, and there's a little bit of that. He was pitching on 3 days rest, so maybe that's a component. I'm not saying that you never pitch him back-to-back days moving forward or anything like that, but I think you're probably a little more cautious about throwing him 4 and 5 days like he did that one time, just to see if that's related. But yeah, it looked pretty good.
Yeah, the load management stuff is it's going to continue to be fascinating, I think, until the Blue Jays maybe add another arm to this bullpen or two so that they can shore things up a little bit, because there's also a reason why we saw Brandon Little only throw, I think it was nine pitches, right?
Yeah.
And not come back out again. So, yeah, the Blue Jays overused their high-leverage arms early in the season, and now maybe they are playing a little bit of catch-up, which is why, when Jeff Hoffman gives you an outing like he did yesterday, maybe that is a sign that things are normalizing a bit for a guy like him.
And on the bright side, if you're looking at reinforcements, mm-hmm. the trade deadline is one thing. Jimmy Garcia got into a Triple A game yesterday. He threw, 22 pitches, and went. He only went 2/3 of an inning, but struck out a batter, walk a hit. We obviously don't really care about the results, right, other than like the velocity was 96 and touch 97. He is going to come back to Toronto now, and they'll evaluate what the next steps are. They obviously wouldn't activate him today because he pitched 22 pitches yesterday, but it certainly seems feasible that Jimmy Garcia could rejoin the Blue Jays during this series, if not this series, this weekend after he gets one more in AAA. Mm-hmm. Ryan Burr also made his fourth rehab appearance on Friday, got up to 22 pitches, hit a walk and a strikeout. All the underlying, because it's AAA, we have all the data, the stuff looks as good as it did last year when Ryan Burr like quietly had a really strong stretch run to the season. So the underlying stuff looks good there with Ryan Burr. Maybe he's back in the mix this week as well. What that would mean for, you know, Justin Brewer, Mason Fluharty. I kind of think Mason Fluharty's the next guy to go down.
Right.
It's, what is it here? I had it 8.35 ERA over 18 innings since mid-May. He obviously had that great start, but they have three lefties in the bullpen right now. I would assume they get rid of one of those when Ryan Burr and or Jimmy Garcia are back, and Mason Fluharty obviously has options. You could do Justin Brule as well, but given Fluharty's struggles, I kind of think he might go down next.
Yeah, that would make sense. And it's unfortunate, right? I was pretty high on Fluharty even during spring training. It was such a cool story when he joined this team. It was such a cool story the way that his career started, and he looked like he would never allow a hit to a right-handed batter. But obviously these things normalize, right? These things tend to catch up to you. And when you're a two-pitch lefty, I proposed this over the weekend, but maybe you do look, if you want to keep Fluharty around, maybe you do look at him as a specialty guy. He is your left-on-left reliever, and that is it. That's a possibility. But when you have other options, other lefties, who haven't been around for as long, who maybe teams like the Yankees, like the Red Sox, or the Angels have not yet seen, which does make a difference. It's part of the reason why Fluharty was so successful early on. It's because you just didn't have enough data on a guy like him, mm-hmm. right, coming up. And obviously he was pitching very well and locating better than he is right now, but I do think that there is at least a little bit of an element of surprise when a guy like that comes up. So, yeah, there's two options here. Either you stick with him and you try to work him into pockets of opposing lineups that work better for that repertoire, or you send him back down, allow him to work on some stuff, maybe develop something else so that he can have more extended success in the major leagues. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it absolutely makes sense. And it's why you see a lot of young relievers especially go up and down, right, because it's also just part of it where, like, even if Mason Fluharty were pitching really well, if he was pitching really, really well, but like we saw Braden Fisher go down when he was pitching well. We saw Paxton Schultz go down when he had, Paxton Schultz hit the IL on the weekend, by the way, with a right middle finger inflammation. I would show you what that looks like, but it's rude to show you. This is part of being an optionable reliever as well, as sometimes it makes sense for the state of the bullpen for you to work on things at AAA versus in the major league bullpen. So we'll see how that shakes out. We'll get some updates today from John Schneider, I would imagine. Couple other updates from down on the farm. Johnny King finally went up to Dunedin and struck out 6, walked 4, and allowed 1 hit in his debut. So the same thing we've seen with a couple of these guys when they first get the bump. The walks are there in the first game. We'll see how he rebounds from that. Mm-hmm. Cal Steven finished up a really great June with Vancouver, over a strikeout per inning, really low ERA and things like that. And then Jerome Watts-Brown had a good 4-inning start yesterday, wasn't pitch efficient enough to go deep, but I mention him because he will be on the show with us tomorrow, and we will talk about some of his development and the nice season he's had at AA. Yeah. The other move we saw on the weekend, other than Paxton Schultz to the IL and Justin Brule called back up, is Alan Roden went down for Will Wagner. We didn't get a chance to talk about it because we weren't on air. You and Cho talked about it, I assume. But
yeah, what'd
you think? I imagine part of it is like they would like Alan Roden to swing a bat once in a while.
Yeah. I don't blame the Blue Jays for making this move. I think that when you look at what Roden had offered so far and just really the Blue Jays needs at that point. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. was hit with a pitch, right? That was on Thursday, I believe. Then there was the whole thing where he was not in the lineup to start Friday, and then he was put back in the lineup, but as the DH, he DH'd the next day as well. Yes, he came back and played first base yesterday, but you need another first baseman. You need someone who can play first base, right? That was plain and simple. Henry Clement got those reps while Vladdy DH'd, and then there was no one else. Maybe we would see Miles Straw at first base if that was necessary. So the Blue Jays needed to bring someone up, and I still expect Rodon to get chances in the future. I still expect this organization to stay high on him because there's a lot to like there. But when you're in a win now situation and your star first baseman is potentially hurt, then you kind of need to make a move. And it makes sense that it would be Rodon. I don't think that Nathan Lucas is even in that conversation anymore of who gets sent down when so-and-so come up. I think that he's not really part of that conversation anymore. And
I mean, he's hitting second sometimes.
Yes, yeah. And he's thriving, right? He's doing well in that position as well. So, yeah, you kind of pick whether you want to send a lefty bat down or a righty bat down. Davis Schneider for now stays. Alan Rodon goes down. We'll see how that shakes up as more guys come back as well. But Rodon is still part of this organization's future. Just maybe doesn't fit into the present as much as the Blue Jays would have liked.
Yeah, and when it comes to the 12th or 13th man, I think it makes sense to rotate those a little bit just so, again, the guy's not down for too long without playing regularly. In terms of when the next decision comes up, not imminent. Anthony Santander still hasn't picked up a bat. Dalton Varsho was hoping to run the bases maybe this weekend, maybe start of this week. He had obviously been set back a little bit after feeling some tightness. So no update there. And then with Varsho, he would obviously have to run the bases, feel good, then go on a rehab assignment because it's been a couple weeks now. So you're talking Angel series at the absolute earliest and then probably even longer than that, probably that next road trip. So you got a week here, Will Wagner. I don't know how many games you'll get into. Certainly won't play against Carlos Rodon and Max Fried probably. Two pretty tough lefties to start this series. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll set up this Yankee series. We'll answer a bunch of your texts in the text line as well. You can text us at 590, 590. Standard data and message rates may apply. We have some leftover from last week as well. But yeah, let us know how you're feeling. Throw us some questions. Big series. Very fun week of baseball. Also, it's a fun week in general in sports because NHL free agency and NBA free agency are open. So like as this show's going on, I'm getting DMs about the Raptors luxury tax situation. Like, Ian, I'm on air,
come
man.
Come on, guys.
Yeah,
you know
I don't
Blake
know if he's sitting upstairs,
unavailable.
But yeah. So lots going on. Hopefully it won't be like Friday where I have to do a Maasai monologue and then an extra show after, but we'll see.
That was such a good monologue, though.
Still angry about, or angry is not the right word. Still pretty disappointed at how that went down and how the press conference was on Friday.
Let's talk about it at the break. I kind of didn't catch anything.
Yeah, it was not. If you are a Raptors fan, it was not the most encouraging press conference about the new structure of things and what the future of that position might be. We'll see. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Bobby Webster gets promoted and it's all good and there's continuity there outside of Maasai. But yeah, didn't come away from the press conference. It felt the last time I had felt that badly about a Toronto sports press conference was after the Ross Atkins one after the Jose Berríos got pulled from the game, where it was like enough that Mark Shapiro then also had to do a press conference to like, I know it was probably scheduled anyway, but it felt like a damage control press conference.
Yeah.
That's the last time I felt that badly about a press conference. Anyway, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll answer some of your texts, 590, 590. Send them in. Let us know how you're feeling. Let's take a break. That's Texas Jays Talk Plus continues with Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz.
Big opinions and in-depth conversations covering the Leafs, Jays, Raptors, and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkin Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz with you. We'll talk to Keith McPherson of WFAN at 11 o'clock. We'll get the Yankees side of this series. Marcus Stroman returned yesterday for the Yanks, old friend. They've turned the corner a little bit. We'll also talk to Eno Saris of The Athletic, of Rates and Barrel, at 11:30. Tarek Skubal was pretty dominant last night. And for the first time in over 100 starts, Tarek Skubal, for the first pitch of the game, didn't throw a fastball.
Whoa, really?
Yes.
That is very impressive and weird. I guess it's not that weird when you consider, if you stop to look, there's actually a lot of guys who would kind of sort of fall into that category. But
what is it? 119 consecutive starts, he had thrown a fastball first pitch.
Wow.
And then for the first time in 120, he got a changeup.
Worked out for him fine, too, right?
I mean, yeah.
He was great. Yeah. Was it a career high in strikeouts as well?
Season
high, maybe?
Yeah, it was a lot of strikeouts. It was a lot of Tarek Skubal.
Yeah.
He
delivers every time. He delivers on the energy,
Sunday
too.
Sunday Night Baseball, big stage. Yeah, we'll talk to Eno about that. We'll talk to him about pitching in general. A couple of the young guys who made their debuts this week. He was part of a trade deadline big board over at The Athletic. So we'll talk to him about some of the starters who could be available for the Blue Jays if that's the pool they end up shopping in. We'll also, the Rates and Barrels guys, despite all of them being regulars on the show, they were not as high on the Blue Jays as a wildcard team on their show last week. So we'll grill Eno about that as well. Right now, though, we're going to grill you guys and make fun of your terrible questions in the text line. I kid. Text us to 590-590. Standard data and message rates may apply. Let us know how you're feeling. What do we got in there? I know we had a bunch of leftover from last week as well. What's cooking in the text line, Julia?
We actually have two very good ones right off the bat today.
Sorry, I'm playing heel today.
Jamie from Toronto. Why aren't we talking more about extending Bo? Among the leader in many categories, is everyone resigned to him leaving? Please give me your answer. I'm very curious.
I don't think people are resigned to him leaving. It's just this front office has generally not negotiated in season. If you're Bo Bichette, given where you were last offseason, like if I'm Bo Bichette, I want to go to free agency and see what I'm worth. At this point, like if you had obviously working out an extension this past offseason would have been difficult with Bichette coming off an injury plagued season, the worst season of his career. Right now, if I'm playing really well, like the Jays would have to not overpay, but you have to buy out the possibility that I keep cooking the whole second half, we go on a playoff run, and then I have a bigger market right now. I think it's close enough to free agency at this point that if I'm Bichette, I just want to see what's out there. Yeah. And there's not a ton of risk of, like, if you get hurt in the second half or whatever. I think if I'm Bichette, I'm just not doing it. And then this front office has, as far as I can tell, just not really negotiated in season with the big picture stuff.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Vladdy is obviously the exception to any case that you put forward, and that is why the Blue Jays continue to negotiate even after, you know, self-imposed deadlines and spring training and all of that. So yeah, I don't think anyone is resigned. We got that question yesterday as well in postgame. And my view is that it's very much one thing at a time for the Blue Jays now, because this team is good and this team is going to be a buyer at the deadline. There's a ton of business that is about to happen for the Blue Jays. And so maybe it's not the time, plain and simple. I agree with you. If I'm Bo, I also want to go and test the market and see what's up. Maybe you can take the best deal possible and bring it back to the Blue Jays and say, can you match this?
Yeah.
And here's where things, in my mind, get a little more interesting. It's that, and I said this yesterday in postgame as well, but when Bo says that he wants to play with Vladdy for the rest of their careers, I believe him, because Bo is not one to draw attention from himself. He's actually a really quiet guy. He doesn't want the spotlight necessarily, especially when it comes to contract stuff. He is going to keep it more to himself, as opposed to Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who would go out and talk about it and
Instagram comments.
Exactly. Kind of stir the pot a little bit. Bo is different. So if he's saying that and if he's repeating that, it means that it's true and there's something there. Will it be the final factor in his decision? Probably not. But yeah, I think that there is a good chance that the Blue Jays are going to extend him. It just doesn't seem like it's going to happen in season.
Yeah, and I think with him wanting to play with Vlad, I would think that that's a case where, like, if the deals are equal, but that desire to play with Vlad is probably does not have a big dollar figure attached to it. Yeah, so you're still going to have to come correct on the contract. We'll see. I get why people are asking about it. I try to put myself in the player and agent shoes with that, and I just play out a strong season. You know, we know that, not saying the Jays are going to win the World Series or whatever, but if your team goes on a playoff run, that's really good for your market.
Doesn't mean he's gone. No, it does not.
Just means you've lost the window to not compete with other teams.
Yeah, and he has earned the right to test the market. Bo has been very good for a long time for this team, last season notwithstanding, because of injuries and because of everything that was going on. And then he's back and he's healthy. And look, he's good again, right? He's hitting leadoff. It's going to be a fascinating market for a guy like Bo Bichette. Okay, another one. Andrew in Hamilton. This is such a good question. Would you feel better playing a 3-game wildcard series against the Yankees or against the Rays?
I would feel better, and this is so weird given what the last 10 years have been like or whatever. I would feel better playing against the Rays. That is partially the Yankees have the best player in the series in Aaron Judge, but really it's that Carlos Rodon and Max Fried are the 1-2 in that rotation. Things get dicier for the Yankees after that. The Rays are the best team at like mixing and matching and finding matchups and advantages and stuff like that. They've obviously played really well. The Rays have a really deep rotation this year, but it's hard to given the choice, be like, I would like to face Carlos Rodon and Max Fried.
Yeah, because that's kind of what I'm looking at right now with the way that the standings are in this moment, which is probably far from where we're going to finish. But yeah, the Blue Jays would be in line to face the Rays in the wild card series as the number one and number two wild card spots there. And that's just brutal given the way that and the Rays would have home field. Obviously, we don't even know where that would be, but we remember how things went at Steinbrenner Field earlier this season. That would be a pretty fascinating matchup. Let me ask you this, though. If the Blue Jays find success against Carlos Rodon and Max Fried this series, does that change your mind?
No, it won't change anything. They're Carlos Rodon and Max Fried, and I have a very healthy amount of respect for the Rays, and I'm on record as a big Ryan Pepiot guy. Mm-hmm. Before the Rays got really good, Zach Littell looked like someone maybe you would try to trade for as an expiring contract free agent and things like that. They're very good. Drew Rasmussen, best right-handed cutter in baseball. Like, I get it, but it's Carlos Rodon and Max Fried.
Yeah, that's a good point. Another one here from today. Jake in Toronto, what are some underrated prospects that are in the Blue Jays farm system that you guys think have a realistic shot at getting some playing time in the near future? Do you have anyone in mind?
Yeah, in the near future, like not really this year. Like we've talked about the names. RJ Schreck was on the show last week on the position player side. I think most people know the AAA names. Like if you're talking just like get some innings, like Laz Estrada and Adam Klofenstein are probably like, and Andrew Bash are probably like next up. So I'll go down a little further because, and look, everyone is like pretty familiar with the prospects at this point. Right. Jaron Watts Brown, Trey Savage, Cal Steven, who's even further away. But Jackson Hornung on the hitter side just got bumped to Double A. He had terrific numbers at High A. The interesting thing with him was he was a catcher and he wasn't getting it done very well at the plate. Apparently the reviews on his catching weren't that good. Some of the stolen base numbers against him were wild. So this year he is no longer catching. He's primarily playing first base and playing a little bit of left field as well, and the bat has just entirely clicked. He was OPSing 855 at High A before getting the bump to Double A and has been red hot at Double A as well. I don't want to oversimplify, and it's that, a 16-round pick, once he stopped playing catcher, the bat is unbelievable. But I think as far as guys in the higher levels of the minors who have some helium to them right now, he's probably the name on the position player side. Lower in the system, Edward Duran has really improved his stock as like as a catcher of the future. The hit tool is really good. He's improved a lot when it comes to, I think he leads the Florida State League in caught stealing. I don't know if it's percentage or just total caught stealing, but like the run game stuff has come around, and the Florida State League is like wild stolen base numbers.
Right on.
So that's one further down, but that's not near to catchers take forever. So that's there's not really all the near term ones we've talked about a lot. We got 2 hours of data filled. There's no prospect stone unturned here.
Absolutely true. But, let's stay there then. And I did want to ask you, depending on what Adam Macko does, do you think that there is a chance that we may see him down the stretch in some role, right? I'm not saying that he's going to come in and he's a starter for the Blue Jays, but what do you think?
Yeah, I think like if you're playing out a scenario where, let's say, Max Scherzer's thumb flares back up, yes. Mm-hmm. I don't know that, like, he's 24. I don't know that he'd be a candidate for bullpen stuff. They need to get his innings up because he's dealt with injuries throughout. This year wasn't an arm injury, so you're not really worried about, like, oh, he's coming back from TJ. It was a knee injury. Mm-hmm. So you would really like to. He only threw 93 innings over the course of the minor leagues last year. So I think the goal is probably to make sure his innings total gets to a level where if they need him in the majors next year, you can build on that. So probably he's in the spot start category. Right. For me right now, like, obviously they released Spencer Turnbull, Bowden Francis on the IL. So let's, I don't want to put this out there, but let's say Max Scherzer's thumb flares up and he needs an extra couple days after this next one. Maybe he comes up and spot starts a game and then goes right back down. Kind of where Easton Lucas started this season at. Matko's obviously got a much higher ceiling than Easton Lucas, but I think they'll be a little more intentional with Matko just because they got to get the innings total back up if he's going to be a starter long-term.
Yeah, the injury really does sort of make things a bit more complicated here as he works his way back to AAA, and we'll see.
Yeah, and he's been back there a couple starts now. It just hasn't gone that well.
Yeah,
but
yeah, so we'll see how it goes. It's it is one of the fascinating questions around this rotation, around this pitching staff. At a different point, another time when we did one of these, we got a question from Thad on Twitter that basically
it was a DM one.
So he says, I'm curious as to what you see the Blue Jays doing later this season if you have Eric Lauer, Max Scherzer, Bowden Francis, Alek Manoah, all healthy up and running. That himself says, listen, it's a lot of what ifs, but what do you think? And considering that it's very, very likely that this team is going to go after a starting pitcher in the market as well.
Yeah, I think this is where you start looking at what guys have played in different roles before and who would be effective in different roles. So Eric Lauer, you know he can comfortably slide to the bullpen, be a bulk, be a long guy out of there. Obviously, he's pitching better than that right now, but Eric Lauer knows the score. He's a 30-year-old minor league invite. If they got to move him back to the bullpen, they're going to do that. Honestly, if all of those guys were healthy at the same time, based on results, I think Bowden Francis would probably be in AAA.
Mm-hmm.
If Max Scherzer had gotten back before Bowden Francis got hurt. Now, look, there's lots of time. Like, Bowden Francis is only throwing from flat ground right now. He'll get back up to bullpens. You get 30 days to rehab in AAA, so he doesn't have to use an option to go down there and get stretched back out or whatever. But the way things looked before he went on the shelf, that would be it. Alek Manoah, and I know there's another question from Brody in Nova Scotia there as well. So the latest on Adam Manoah is that he is going to throw tomorrow. For the first time, he's going to throw a multi-inning bullpen.
Right.
So he's been throwing live BPs. He got up as high as 25 pitches. He's hit 95 on the radar gun, which he was not doing before the injury, so that's really encouraging. They're going to be methodical with how much they let him build up in live BPs, because once you send him on a rehab assignment, the rehab assignment clock starts. So they're, as I understand it, they're going to let him do a number of multi-inning live BPs and then start building him up. So you are, you know, you're talking at least probably like minimum a month, probably even more than that, because like once he starts a rehab, you're going to want him to start at FCL or Dunedin, work his way back up to AAA, get the pitch counts up. But if he's only for the first time tomorrow doing a multi-inning live BP, I think we're talking months plural, or at least like 6 weeks kind of thing. I would be pretty shocked if he's talked about as an option before August.
Before August. Yeah, that's kind of what I sort of had in mind, with no real information behind it other than what we have. But yeah, it seems like a mid-August type of thing. At the earliest. So we'll see. And yeah, there's a lot of what ifs to consider there. One thing that comes to mind, and I'm very curious to hear what you have to say about this, but is there a world in which for the last 2 months of the season or whatever it is, maybe not even that, the Blue Jays can run with a six-man rotation?
Yeah, you can't do it for like long stretches of time, because it means you have one fewer bullpen arm. And I don't think, like we've talked about their bullpen being taxed and stuff like that, I don't think they'd want to go to a seven-man bullpen for too long. I will say, coming out of the All-Star break, they play, 14 games in 13 days.
Yeah.
And that's because there's a makeup doubleheader against the Orioles. It's right before the trade deadline. Maybe that's a spot where you get more aggressive with, we're going to spot start someone here, send them back down. They come back up on the doubleheader day when you get a 27th person. I don't think it's like these things, when the schedule is really dense, that's the time to do a six-man, but it's also when having a short bullpen could really hurt you. So that's the one stretch of schedule that I've looked at where you could really make the case. Otherwise, they don't play more than 9 games. they don't play more than 9 game days in a row in all of August. Mm-hmm. So you wouldn't really need to do it then. You can probably use the off days. And then it doesn't happen until mid-September that you play 14 in a row. And that's when you have an extra roster spot. So maybe you do it then. Like you're probably not going to do it when you've got 3 days and then an off day and 3 days and then an off day. It's just like guys are getting that extra rest built in anyway. But yeah, so those are the two windows coming out of the All-Star break when you have 14 games in 13 days. And then there is a 14 and 14 stretch in September when you have an extra bullpen spot. Those are the two spots I'd look at.
Yeah, that's a good point. And depending on how the standings are looking,
that's a factor too, right? Yeah. Like if you are one game out of the division, do you really want to give everyone, is it worth it to give everyone 1 day rest and start, say, Adam Mako up from AAA or Alec Manoah if he's ready or something like that, and lessen your chances of winning that game? Yes, everyone gets like their fatigue meter gets a little bit better for the rest of the way, but you maybe don't have as good a chance of winning that game. If you're in a division race, that gets tougher to do. And also your veteran pitchers are probably like, no, give me the ball every
100%. Yeah. Okay, let's see what else we have.
We got a couple
here.
Time for a couple quick ones.
Yeah, do you see any particular ones that you like here?
I will just say Ian from Brampton asked if Max's thumb starts bugging him, do you put him in the bullpen and see how he's doing? Now, that's interesting because the 50 pitches or so has been like the pain point for Max Scherzer. Scherzer's pitched out of the bullpen in the playoffs before, but he's been pretty vocal that I think he thinks he can help the team most as a starter because he's Max Scherzer and you can go around. It's also like he's not throwing like 99, right? He's not gassing it up that way. I think things would have to be pretty frustrating for Max Scherzer thumb-wise, and someone else has to come through and click as a starter before you start exploring that. Like, the Jays just need him to start too badly right
and
now.
And honestly, you know, Max Scherzer has earned the right to have a big say on what kind of role he is filling for a team, and if he believes that he belongs still in the rotation. One, you trust him to have the best interest in mind for himself and for the team, and two, you kind of just accept and respect that with the career that he's put together, this is a guy that has earned to have a bit more of a say on that, I believe.
Personally. Yeah, and I think that that makes sense. Jamie and Thornhill had asked if we have any theories on why pitchers are so babied today. I can guarantee you, being 65 years old, that if Goose Gossage was told he couldn't come in for a fourth game in a row to save it, there would be a mess in the bullpen. Yeah, look, this is a problem baseball-wide, and it is related to injuries, and it is related to the fact that everyone comes in and throws 100% all of the time. It's why I love watching Chris Bassett pitch so much, where the ability to add stuff, take stuff off, the pitchability aspect. And even Chris Bassett is a guy that, like, tops out at 200 innings and around 100 pitches. This is a question that, yes, Goose Gossage would chuckle at it. It's kind of like the toothpaste is so far out of the tube at this point, I don't know how we get back. It was originally out of a concern for pitchers and trying to keep pitchers healthy. There's also a little bit of a numbers component that league-wide, the third time you see a pitcher, every hitter does better. Yep. And so, like, offenses are way better, and you have extra bullpen spots now. So, you know, is Chris Bassett's 101st pitch better than Yariel Rodriguez's first pitch? Those are the kind of questions teams ask. I'm with you to the extent that this is one, like, analytical principle thing that I don't really like. Like, I miss workhorses. Roy Halladay is like my all-time favorite player. Like, I like guys who go long and throw complete games and get 200 innings and stuff. And again, it's why I'm such a big Chris Bassett fan. It's just, it's not a babying thing so much as it is everyone throws 100% all the time, and everyone is designing every pitch to get the maximum spin rate possible. And we have gone from, like, some pitchers might at some point need Tommy John surgery to every pitcher is going to have at least one Tommy John surgery and maybe two Tommy John surgeries during their career. All this stuff is related. There's not really an easy solution. The solution would take years, and you would have to say that, like, at the major league level, there is something that, like, Chris Bassett suggested, like you have to go X number of pitches or so. I think someone has suggested you have to go X number of pitches or X number of innings as a starter. You have fewer bullpen spots so that you have to lean on starters more. But you can't do that today because you have trained all of these guys and built rosters and organizations designed to maximize. So it would have to be like a 5-year trend. This is also stuff, by the way, that happens at the youth levels as well. I don't know. Toothpaste out of the tube. It does kind of suck. I understand why we get questions like that. I don't have a good answer for it.
No, other than just this is how the game is trending.
Yeah, and like how you walk it back is like
it's a years long process. And so, yeah, I love when we get back in my day questions. Yeah.
It's a years long process too, that like teams have to be incentivized to do it, because like we'll have guys who can pitch more innings and let a guy go a third time through the order more often. It's like, okay, we'll lose more games. If if we do that and everyone else doesn't, we're going to lose more baseball games. Yep. So you have to come up with a kind of league-wide way. Okay, that was rambly enough. Thank you for the questions. We'll do more text line stuff later in the week, I'm sure. Right now, we're going to take a break. We'll set up this Yankee series with Keith McPherson of WFAN. After the break, we'll also talk to Eno Saris of The Athletic, go around baseball with some pitching topics. That's next as JStock Plus continues with Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz.
Teeing up the biggest games of the night, it's the Fan Pregame with Ailish Forfar and Justin Cuthbert.
Weekdays at 6 p.m. on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz with you. Jays will get going 7:07 tonight. Max Scherzer against Carlos Rodon. What a pitching match. We also get Kevin Gausman against Max Fried tomorrow for Canada Day. Fun series. And then for whatever reason, the Blue Jays are at home for July 4th.
Sure.
I don't know why they do that, but the Angels will be here instead of doing a July 4th game in the U.S. Whatever. I'm sure.
Come on, algorithm.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk Yankees. Let's go down to New York. Let's talk to Keith McPherson, host at WFAN 660. Keith, what's up, man? How you doing?
Hey, good morning. What's up, guys? Thanks for having me. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good, man. Got to ask, before we talk Yankees stuff, I saw you at a Fanatics Fest doing a bunch of stuff. And, like, when you get to run into Spike Lee, like, is that still really cool for you? Or are you just, like, that to me, that's New York sports royalty, right? Is that still really cool?
Yeah, of course. Now, I've met Spike probably 6 times, and I think for the first 3 times, he didn't realize he had met me. we go back to 2014. And he's just always meeting people, signing autographs, taking pictures. He's Spike Lee. He's an icon, not just for his sports fandom, but what he's done in movies and entertainment. And, yeah, it's always a good time running into Spike.
Keith, let's talk about the Yankees a little bit, or this iteration of the Yankees. There was a bit of maybe concern a little bit earlier this month. But that 6-game losing streak just seems like it's behind them at this point, taking 2 out of 3 against the A's, especially in the way that they did it yesterday. Kind of a statement win there. Where are you in the confidence level?
Yeah, I thought you were going to say Saturday. There's concern Saturday. They got blanked 7-0. We thought the misery was back. But, you know, what I feel about this Yankees team is they have so much talent. They have so many hitters in the lineup. They have the best hitter in baseball. They also have a rotation that is pitching a lot better than we expected after losing Gerrit Cole. So, like, when you put those two things together, we have high expectations for them. And Yankee fans are spoiled. We expect to win every series and sweep every series. So when we go through a scoreless inning streak or a streak of not having the lead, losing games, you know, losing to the Angels, losing back-to-back weekends to the Boston Red Sox, we're like, what's going on here? Like, this is not the product. This is not the standard. You guys are better than this. But, yeah, yesterday was a great game. I went to the game, and I hope that they righted the ship. But this is the real test coming up in the AL East against the Toronto Blue Jays going up north. Like, you got to prove it up there. You got to go to the Rogers Center and keep it going. And luckily, we do have, Rodon lined up, Fried lined up. Like, we should have we should have the advantage in pitching. We have our best arms going.
So you mentioned the rotation holding up better than expected with Cole and Heal and guys like that on the IL. Marcus Stroman returned yesterday. I know expectations aren't the highest for him after the way the season started. What did you see from him? I mean, he's a fun guy to watch, like a former Blue Jay that we keep an eye on. Seems like his relationship with the Yankees fans has been particularly up and down.
You guys want him back? You interested in setting up some kind of trade for Stroman to come back? You know, I'll say this about Stro. He is a New Yorker. He's also a guy who is undersized, so he's always got a chip on his shoulder. He's an outside-the-box thinker. And sometimes that type of stuff doesn't all go over so well with the media, with social media, with how you answer interviews and how you do things. But, man, I was happy to have him back yesterday. You know, the Yankees pitched Allen Winans against the Reds in the first game of that series. He was good for 3 innings, and then he turned back very much into the minor leaguer. that he is. You know, the Yankees, I said, had, you know, injuries with Cole and Luis Gil not being in the lineup. And Stroman's a guy that last year the Yankees didn't need. Like, they shut him down for the second half of the year. They didn't go to him at all in October. And then when we started off this year, the conversation was around trading him. Everybody was sure that he was going to go to St. Louis in a package for Nolan Arenado or anywhere. And I'm just like, now we're at this point where what is Marcus Stroman? I don't know. But if he can make a spot start and pitch like he did yesterday, it's much needed. This will be his last year with the team. His contract is not going to vest. He had a 140 innings clause where if he pitched 140 innings with us, that, you know, it would vest into next year. So this is it for Stroman as a Yankee, and if he can help, we'll welcome it.
Yeah, maybe end on a bit of a positive note then, if there's been that much friction, I guess, between player and fan base and things along those lines. But to sticking with yesterday's game, Keith, I wanted to ask you about Aaron Judge. Passes Lou Gehrig for, I think, his third now in multi-homer games in franchise history. Also a guy that was maybe slower as the Yankees were scuffling, but I guess there was really never any real reason for concern here, right?
Yeah, I think yesterday was his 44th multi-homer game passing Lou Gehrig, which is crazy. He's just consistently doing things that put him in the conversation with Gehrig, Babe Ruth, DiMaggio, and he's all world, you know. When Aaron Boone sat him against the Royals and it was a scheduled rest day, he had been going crazy. We had been talking about Triple Crown. This is when he had pulled, like, closer to Cal Raleigh. His average was around 400. And everybody was saying, like, this guy's putting together the best right-handed hitting season we've ever seen. But the Yankees believe in scheduled rest. It's a long 162 when they pick their spots. And that kind of cooled him off. You know, he started striking out a ton. He was striking out twice a game. He came back down to earth. He had not driven in a run outside of a couple homers, the crochet homer, the homer he had in Cincinnati, where we're like, what's going on with Judge, right? Judge will slap through a single, double, be clutch. But you know what it was? For the first time ever, I saw Aaron Judge with a little bit of stubble. he grew out a little bit of a beard. And yesterday was photo day for the fans, and some of the fans have pictures of Judge with a little bit of, like, looking like he needed to shave. But then once he got into the game and then post-game, he was clean shaved. So Judge is such a quintessential Yankee. Judge is such a, like, you know, believes in the Yankee way. He's got to always be clean shaved. But I think he was flirting with the idea of letting his beard grow in a little bit to break out of the slump. He shaved. He had two homers yesterday. And he's back to being the Judge we all know and love.
Not everyone can do this like us, Keith. You know, it's not everyone's built for it.
This is me growing. This is a week. This is the most I can do.
Nice. All right. So you mentioned Rodon going today. Rodon and Max Fried as a 1-2 in this rotation. We had a listener question in the last segment, like, who would you fear the most in a wild card series? And the Yankees are obviously leading the division, so it doesn't matter yet. But yeah, I want no piece of Rodon and Max Fried in a three game series, in any series, really, as a 1-2. But I know last time out for Rodon, you didn't love that the Yankees had him come out after six innings. He wasn't even at 90 pitches yet. They ended up blowing that game against the Reds. What have you seen from that perspective, just in, like, they really haven't, I don't think Rodon's thrown more than 93 pitches since May. They kind of, like, are they being careful with him with intention, or is just this is just 2025 and where we're at?
In his outing against the Reds, I specifically felt a way about that because people leaned on, it's hot. The heat index was over 100. Oh, Keith, Rodon has been great. Yeah, well, you know, through this stretch of offensive struggles, the pitching we could hang our hat on. The pitching has been great. So what I felt like was him getting through six innings clean, 88 pitches, and saying, I'm done, I'm huffing and puffing, and Boom backing him up, saying, oh, he was out of gas. Well, sit down, have some water, take some deep breaths, and start the seventh inning. If you give up a hit, we'll take you out. And then there was an argument about not bringing in Loaiziga with an inherited runner. Supposedly Loaiziga had been sick the day before. Whatever. That game unraveled as soon as you took the starter out. So, you know, I my take was just like, you get paid $27 million to be an ace-type pitcher. Six innings and then going and saying you were tired, then you should be in better shape. It's hot for everybody. And we need you right now while we're struggling. The Yankees were up 3-0. They immediately gave those three runs back. Now, that's not a knock on Carlos Rodon. It was more of a knock on the culture of the Yankees. As I go back to scheduled rest and saying at 88 pitches, here, you've hit your wall. And, oh, yeah, this guy, like, I don't, like, let him face another batter. If he hasn't thrown more than 93, like, today is a day we need more out of you. You got to push these guys. They have to be pushed to fight. And I think Rodon, going back to the beard policy, Rodon with the beard, he is a different person this year. He's got a different level of confidence. He's got a different pitch mix. He's throwing everything. And he's given us moments of looking like an ace. He should have had his 10th win because I really feel like, you know, they should have won that game last week against the Reds. I'm interested to see what he does against the Blue Jays. He's got to keep the ball in the park. If you guys hit some home runs off him, that's one thing that has plagued him, the long ball. But he has been sharp. He has been a much-needed ace-like figure with Gerrit Cole going down.
Keith, you touched on it a little bit, but I did want to ask you if the scheduled rest days also correlates to a bit of your frustration with a situation like Carlos Rodon. Are those two things linked in your mind?
Yeah, I think it is. It's obviously analytics-driven and data-based, and they kind of think about these things in the grand scheme of things. And I feel like you got to go more off a heart. You got to go more off of a human element. You got to go, you know, Clint Frazier just went viral going on foul territory talking about how the Yankees don't believe in hot. They believe in numbers. You can go 3-for-3 or 4-for-4 and then rest the next day, which we literally saw. You know, we saw Judge Homer 2 days in a row sit. We saw Bellinger have 3 days or 3 hits on a day, sit the next day. Volpe have 3 hits on a day, sit the next day. They literally don't believe in any type of, like, human element of, like, hey, this guy's seeing the ball well. Or human element of, like, hey, this starting pitcher is out there competing for us. Put him back out and see how the seventh inning goes. Maybe he rolls through the seventh inning and only throws 15 pitches, and then the day is done. I don't know. It's where we are in modern day sports, baseball, and sports science. It is all compounded, and when it doesn't work out, I mean, that's when we're loud. When it does work out, no one says anything, but when it doesn't work out, everyone's upset.
Yeah, it's tough, and, like, I get kind of cornered as an analytics, a numbers guy. I hate the starting pitching stuff. Yeah. The like, rest day, whatever, but, yeah, guys can be hot. It's a real thing, and, like, it's not, like, a magic – The thing that the numbers should look at is it's not a magical, this guy just got way better. But like you said seeing the ball. You're seeing the ball well. You feel good about your swing, something like that. You know, we saw Addison Barger before he broke out. He was changing his swing mechanics, like, game to game. And then when he found it, it's not like, oh, that was random. It's like, oh, no, something, like, actually, there's a reason for the hot
you're
streak
building
there.
Up
and then I'd
that.
Imagine, like, when it comes to something like Rodon in the seventh, look, June is maybe a little early, but we got an American League East race here, right? Like, that stuff's going to get a little bit more important. So how are you feeling from that sense? Like, the Rays are annoying, and they've stuck around only a game and a half back of the Yankees. The Jays are 3 games back here. I don't know. It feels like more of a race than maybe it looked like it was going to be for the Yankees out of the gate here.
It is a race, and I've said this on WFAN a bunch. First of all, we should have swept the Rays the first time we played them in George M. Steinbrenner Field, our spring training home. But Devin Williams blew a 4-run lead. If the Rays at any point in time this year pass the Yankees for first place, it is blasphemy. They're Airbnb-ing our home in Tampa. You know, I'm like, this is crazy. We can't let these guys, it pissed me off last week. They're having preliminary conversations about where they'll host the American League Championship Series or World Series. And I called out to the Yankees and Yankee fans on air. I'm like, that means they don't respect you. They're talking right now about, like, hey, where are we going to host these things in the event that they do pass you, in the event that they do beat you in October? They're hot right now. They're playing well. Yes, they are very annoying, but this is a race. And there were many people that were ready to say when the Yankees were 7 games up, all the Yankees are done. They're winning the AL East. They said it on our radio station. They said it on air. And it's too long of a season. Injuries happen. Cold streaks happen. The Yankees played 16 games in 16 days. They went 7-9. Nothing is wrapped up yet. Even the Blue Jays, 3 games back. Like, we're about to play 3 games coming up. Like, this is still very much an open race.
You mentioned Devin Williams there, Keith, and the early narratives around this Yankees team were that, you know, maybe the pitching was the thing that was going to be a bit disappointing, and especially the pen. Is that still the case, and is that still the area that maybe we're going to see more movement at the deadline for this team?
Devin Williams, I mention his name, but I try not to even talk about Devin Williams because it's kind of like some spell got cast on the guy. He was going so bad. Everything was going so wrong. And now it's like, wait, he looks like the Devin Williams that we wanted. There was an article written about how, you know, he's calling his own games now, how he didn't like the pitch com. He didn't like what was being called for him. He is going out there and going off of what he sees and what he feels. He only throws two pitches, but he's been dominant. And I've kind of tried to leave it alone because, like, opening day, I'm sitting in the Delta Club. There's an 8-year-old kid in front of me. He's struggling in the ninth inning. An 8-year-old is booing him. Like, I'm tapping an 8-year-old. Like, hey, don't do that. We need this guy. This is our new closer this year. He's like, this guy stinks. he went on paternity leave. He had his first kid. And when he went on paternity leave, it shook up the bullpen. We ended up losing the series to the Diamondbacks. People blamed him for that. He had another outing against you guys. I was in there for that, where the fans were chanting, "We want Weaver," while he was on the mound. I think Springer got a hit, and then the next guy was hit by pitch, and Yankee fans started chanting, "We want Weaver." I'm like, don't do that. He hasn't even gotten an out. So it has been a rocky road. He lost the closer job, and then when Weaver got hurt, he regained the closer job. And since then, he's been going good. And what everybody says is, if you look at his numbers, even in Milwaukee, he takes a little while to get into his rhythm. Around June is when he locks in. So, hey, let's leave it at that. The closer right now is Devin Williams. Luke Weaver's the setup man, and they've been going pretty strong. The bullpen has been pretty solid, and the starting rotation has been better than expected.
Eight scoreless in a row for Devin Williams, yeah. So maybe he's found it here. Keith, I got a couple quick ones for you before we let you go here. First one is, Spencer Jones just got promoted to AAA. Is he bigger than Aaron Judge? I know you posted a photo of you with him. Like, that is a massive – like, we see Aaron Judge every day, but this is a massive kid, Spencer Jones.
Yeah, I'm 6'2", 205. He's all of 6'7". He might be the same size as Judge. Judge might have a little bit more weight on him. I don't know what he weighs, but no, he looks like a basketball player. He looks like a Transformer, Optimus Prime or something.
Yeah.
You see one of these guys walking up like that. It's like, that's why he mashes baseballs. His first at bat with the Rail Riders, he goes deep, and I'm like, is this a trade bait thing? Are the Yankees kind of showing him off to trade him, or are they going to send him? I don't think they're going to send him this year. There's no room for him. Our number one prospect before, you know, he came up, Jason Dominguez, they barely have time to get him in during the week. So, yeah, I don't know. We'll see what happens with Spencer Jones, but he looks the part for sure.
Go play small forward for the Knicks, man. Like, what are you doing in baseball?
Yeah, they need some bench help. All their fans cry about how they don't have a deep enough bench. Yeah, he could come off the bench for the Knicks and 8 minutes.
Yeah, Tibbs wouldn't play the bench, but whoever the new coach is going to be, maybe play him, although they're never going to hire anyone. So, last one from me.
Staley. They interviewed Staley over the weekend.
Well, because they got rejected. To interview every coach in the NBA already. It's a bit of a mess. Last one for me, and this is, I'm poking fun here a little bit, but I know on our show we get asked a lot, and I know on your show you get asked a lot. Trevor Bauer got sent to the minors in Japan. Are we done? Are we finally done getting asked about this now, you and I?
No. I've taken so many calls on it, and they come out of the blue. And, like, now we're seeing he's struggling, and so what I've said, I'm like, okay, you know, if you know what you know about this guy, on top of him not being the guy anymore, why do you guys keep suggesting him? Hey, you know, the Mets just lost Kodai Senga, Tyler McGill, Griffin Canning. Any interest in bringing in Trevor Bauer? No, it's done. The ship has sailed. Like, we have seen now, it's been like 3 years, and like, nobody will touch the guy. And for obvious reasons, but also because, like, he is not worth it. He's not even worth the league minimum anymore.
No, and it's the worst starting pitcher in Japan. And we got a question in our text line about it literally last week. So it's that to me, I don't think people are asking for baseball reasons when that stuff comes up. But I wanted
point.
To ask you about, because I know you're as frustrated by it as I am. It's
I get attacked. I have a TikTok that I put out there about him, and people are like, "Do you have a Cy Young?" No, I don't have a Cy Young, bro. And also, his Cy Young was in the 60-game season. I thought all that stuff from that year was Mickey Mouse and not valid. But, you know, for Trevor Bauer, we got to make sure we acknowledge him as a Cy Young winner. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, the Dodgers thing is Mickey Mouse, but Trevor Bauer is fine.
Yeah.
Keith, thanks so much for doing this, man. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Good luck, but obviously not too much good luck. Maybe we'll give you a game. Let us get 2 out of 3.
No. No, but thanks, okay, Pete. Yeah,
you guys, sweep us. Sweep us so we can all go back into panic in Yankee land.
Yeah, and then the games will matter more when we meet up again later in the season. It'll be great. Thanks, Keith.
Have a good one. Thanks, guys.
Keith McPherson, host at WFAN 660, one of my favorite New York media guys. And yeah, I snuck that one in because we did get a question about it on Twitter last week.
We got one yesterday posted.
Yeah.
I swear to God.
It's like literally the worst starting pitcher in Japan who just got removed from their major league roster is saying things like, I have five elite pitches, but when I throw it in the zone, it gets hit hard. And when I throw it out of the zone, they don't swing at it.
Yeah. Like, maybe it's not elite, buddy.
That means you don't have five elite pitches. It's just like, I got it for a little bit where people would maybe, you know, my tolerance for the off-field stuff is different than someone else's, even though I disagree with that. But like now it's like, there's not even a pitching case to be made. There's not,
That's it.
It's not about baseball when people bring that up anymore.
Yes,
it's,
we understand that he's become sort of an image for a specific viewpoint or a specific ideology in this world. But of course, let's not even get into that. But when not even the baseball side of things is paying off anymore, you kind of just have to give that one up. I'm sure someone else will show up sooner rather than later, and you can latch on to that.
Yes. Maybe. Yeah. Spencer Turnbull, make him your guy. Okay. Before we take a break and talk to Eno, another question in the text line that we didn't get to, and I want to throw at you. Cheryl in Toronto asked for our thoughts on Jonathan Clase. Mm-hmm. She said, really like the guy, clearly has some tools and can see him being part of the Blue Jays' future, but is it time to send him back to Buffalo for a while? Some of the routes he runs and defense suggest he could use some time to work on those things.
Yeah. Did you watch the game yesterday?
Yeah, I watched all three games.
Finish?
Yeah, it was it was interesting. I would have thought multiple people having to yell at you to get your attention in right field to shift you properly would have been the worst defensive part. And look, left field in Fenway is really difficult.
It is.
It's a tough spot.
At the same time,
it was a bit of a...
There were three plays in there that were less than ideal. Two of them, I would say, absolutely must be made. Maybe the one that just ricocheted off the monster and came back and he couldn't really find it. You can kind of give him a pass on that one just because it is such a weird setup there. But there were other two, when the ball is flying over your head or when you just can't, grip a baseball after you've leapt to catch it. It's weird. I mean, there's still a lot to like, but it does. And obviously, Clase did come out of the game after one at bat there. He was pinch hit for. Mm-hmm. Miles Straw came in. Nathan Lucas, I believe, took over and left as Straw took over in center field. Kind of, how can I put this? I mean, the guy clearly has a ton to offer. It's just you have to put it all together. And I know that he's a very different guy from Madison Barger, but maybe that is the closest comparison that we can make in this team of a guy who struggles his first time and can't really find it, but then comes back and is more mature and is more ready to put all the tools together and be a big contributor for this team. So, I wouldn't mind. I think that the Blue Jays at some point will send Jonathan Clase down just because, right, when Santander comes back, when Varsho comes back, those spots are going to – there's going to be some movement there. That was a tough, tough defensive outing for him. I like him better in center field, which is a weird thing to say.
I mean, the speed can make up for some, like the closing speed can make up for some stuff, but some of the routes and stuff are tough.
So
the other component of this too is, like, if you're looking at, well, there's the odd man out in terms of who goes down in AAA, and then there's the odd man out of who's not playing as much. He is, like, safely the youngest of all these prospects. So when you're looking with a long-term view, Barger's almost 26. It's not, you could send him down to the minors, but he's in kind of the window where it's like, okay, you need to start showing soon that you're a major league guy, and he's done that. Will Wagner's about to turn 27. So he's back up, and at this point for, him and David Schneider, who's 26, this is like, okay, these guys are, they need to show that they're major leaguers at this point. Jonathan Clase is 23 years old and on the young end of 23. So if you send him down, it would not be as big a deal. He has a lot of time left.
Yeah.
To start figuring things out.
I do expect that to happen at some point, if only because the Blue Jays need the roster space. And he still has a ton to prove. I don't know how much more. He still has stuff to learn at the AAA level, I think. It's not like an Alan Roden type of guy who's like, well, you've clearly proven everything there is to prove at AAA, and just there is no room for you here type of thing right now. I don't think that Clase is quite there, but he should make his way down to AAA at some point and continue his development there.
Yep, that makes some sense. Okay, Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk to Eno Saris of The Athletic on the other side. Quick note as well, Treya Savage is going to the All-Star Futures game as one of the Jays representatives.
Very cool.
I'm sure we'll hear more about that between now and the All-Star break. But yeah, no surprise there. The best pitching prospect and fastest rising pitching prospect in the Blue Jay system, who is rising quickly on a lot of the non-Blue Jays boards as well. A lot of helium, to use the scout term there. That's more of a basketball scouting term, I think, but it's fun. You can kind of picture the guy just like floating up the list of prospects.
Yeah, that's a new one in the baseball end, but we are seeing it a little bit
helium.
More now.
All right, let's take a break. Let's talk to Eno on the other side. We'll continue to get you set for Carlos Rodon against Max Scherzer. What a pitching matchup. Yeah, let's take a break. We'll do that on the other side as Jays Talk Plus continues with Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz.
Unrivaled insight, analysis, and opinions on all things Blue Jays. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz with you. Eno Saris will join us in a couple of minutes here. Let's keep doing text line stuff. I got one on Twitter from Scott, who asked, is there more of a chance for the Jays to play Heinemann to get, and that would subsequently give Kirk a few more DH days?
It's always such an interesting question.
Yeah. My answer to that one is mostly that, sure, here and there. They're going to see two tough lefties in a row here. You want Kirk's bat in the lineup regardless, although Kirk missed sat yesterday, so he's probably good to go anyway. The tough part of it for me is, the at-bats have to come. The DH day has to come at someone's expense, and George Springer has mostly been the DH, so then you're putting George Springer into a corner, and then we've already talked about, we get a lot of questions about, Jonathan Clase is not playing enough, or David Schneider's not playing, or Alan Rhodes is not playing enough.
Yeah.
The at-bats have to come at someone's expense, and Heinemann is the guy who I'm most comfortable with, just like, hey, man, you play your backup role, you're always ready. It's not going to harm you to not play a ton.
Plus, we knew that he was going to cool off eventually.
Yes.
Past seven games, 125 average. That kind of tells you what you need to know. He is the backup catcher for this
team. Yes, exactly. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's a very valuable role. Also very valuable, Eno Saris of The Athletic and Rates and Barrels. He joins us now. Eno, what's up, man? How are you?
Doing good. Good to see you.
You too, man. I got to ask. So your birthday was last week. I sent you a happy birthday message. What was the sandwich and beer combination choice to celebrate the birthday?
It was like a pastrami. Oh, I had a pastrami. Cool. And a Pliny the Elder, which is East and West Coast coming together.
There you go. Yeah, the Pliny the Elder. That's a nice choice. For those who don't know, Eno is a big beer guy, big sandwich guy, big everything guy. Probably a big Tarek Skubal guy, especially after last night's start. Man, I know you guys talked on Rates and Barrels the other day about Tarek Skubal particularly and what we can kind of learn from when it takes a guy a couple years to get to that level. What have you made of his ascent to being arguably the best pitcher in baseball over the last couple of years?
We were trying to, look back and see how could we have known this was coming? And, I think a lot of the building blocks were there. He had a really good fastball from the beginning. He didn't quite have the changeup he has now. And he didn't quite have the velocity he has now. But, we have a number of stuff plus that said he was already 10% better than league average when he first arrived in the big league. So there was some stuff that was there already, and then he kind of refined it. And I think one of the lessons is, if you get a guy that has at least average velo and above average stuff, that's the raw material you want, and they can turn into aces all the time. So congratulations on him for doing the work. He did a lot of work to sort of slim his mechanics and be more direct to the plate and found that changeup. But a lot of it was there from the beginning.
Happy belated birthday. And I'm wondering, as you discuss, how could we have known that this was coming, and you look at maybe Skubal's career a bit more holistically, if that also sort of triggers the exercise of, okay, who's next? Who might we be sleeping on here who may turn into a perennial Cy Young winner?
Yeah, always. that's the fun part. But, in terms of rookies that I think have that kind of stuff and could get there eventually, obviously it's a little bit easier when you see somebody like Jacob Mizorowski come out and he's sitting 100 and just dominating from the beginning. But somebody like Jack Leiter right now could be turning the corner. Just we've had other pitchers sort of discover what pitches they can command and what they can command, you know, either changing their mechanics or changing their pitch mix to do that. So that's been a big, you know, big, would be a big change for him. If he could actually command the ball, he has the stuff to be really great. I think somebody like Mick Abel for the Phillies too, has a wide mix, a lot of good breaking balls. And just a slight question about his fastball command. So those are two guys that I like a lot. And of course, Jacob Mizorowski is crazy.
Yeah, you wrote about Mizorowski and Chase Burns and Mick Abel and a couple of those guys last week. And then you got to see Mizorowski against Skeens. Obviously, different type of guys. Mizorowski's going to have to, he's going to have to succeed without elite level command. I think you, what'd you say? DeGrom without command. As a mm-hmm. comp there. Obviously, short term, everything has worked really, really well for Jacob Mizorowski so far. And this can be from an actual baseball or a fantasy baseball perspective. But what are you looking for the rest of the way here from him to know that, yeah, a double-digit walk rate is going to be just fine. This guy's that good.
Yeah, I want to see what happens when a team just, like, doesn't swing at his fastball. Because, you know, as bad as a 96 mile an hour slider is, it might be easier to hit if you sit on it than a 102 mile an hour fastball. So, there might be a team that just decides, hey, we're going to try and hit that slider. He throws it in the zone more, and he's going to walk a bunch of us, and some of us are going to hit that slider. And that's, so I haven't seen a team take that approach yet. And once that happens, we put a lot of pressure on him to actually throw strikes with the fastball.
So with the fastball, so he's number one in the league in extension down the mound. So he's already 6'7". He's got this huge stride, and I know that's good for like the power base and stuff like that, and perceived velocity because he's releasing the ball closer. Is there like he's physically like a kind of a unique guy at that height and that extension? Do we project him to be able to figure out the fastball command, or is that just like so long down the mound and so powerful that it's going to be hard to corral, especially up in the zone?
Well, you know, that was actually a part of Scooble's, you know, step forward was he walked a few people at first and then he figured it out. So, you know, another one, Hunter Brown came up through the minor leagues and everyone said he had poor fastball command. And it doesn't look that way now. So I want to give him some space to be able to do that. But I think that the way that you figure out command is not, oh, he just gets better. I think it's like, oh, he's now throwing a sinker and he can command the sinker better, it turns out, you know? So there's like, you know, I think maybe he throws a cutter in the future instead of that slider or whatever it is. I don't think he's going to magically find command on that pitch.
You know, when you sort of put yourself into this exercise of trying to project where a guy is going, what the future of their career is going to look like, obviously maybe comparing them to guys who have come up recently is a good place to start. But I am very curious as to how you sort of define which models you're going to focus on, what you're going to pay attention to as a way to build a potentially holistic prediction of where these guys are going.
I'm kind of fastball pilled. Like, I know that we're using the fastball less and less, but just for a young guy, if they have good shape on their fastball, I think it's just their ceiling is so much higher. You know, there's a lot of pitchers in baseball that have a lot of secondaries and not a great fastball, and they have success. But when you talk about the guys who win the Cy Young, they usually have a dominant fastball and a dominant secondary. But I can bet on the dominant fastball any day. So, and the way that I try to think about a fastball is not only velo, but this is the sort of newest way to think about fastballs is, you know, you have an arm slot and there's a dead zone of movement. There's a expected movement off of that arm slot. And whatever you can do to not have that expected movement, that is what makes a good fastball. So somebody like Spencer Schwellenbach throws from a sidearm, but he cuts his four-seam so that it doesn't do this. Because when you throw a sidearm fastball, everyone thinks, oh, it's gonna be big and sideways. It's going to do this, you know? And so he cuts his fastball, and, I mean, he's, like, right now one of the best pitchers in the big leagues. So you know, I like when the fastball has unique characteristics and velo. And that's sort of where I start.
Yeah, the arm angle stuff's interesting. Like Jacob Lopez is a guy I know got a mention on the way out in that one, and he's a low arm slot guy. Obviously, with Schwellenbach, the stuff's just so nasty. With guys who the stuff isn't quite as good, but there's something to their profile of they're unconventional. So this is a little weird. Guys don't see it a lot. Maybe Lopez is an example. I think of Treya Savage, the Blue Jays prospect, because one of the funky things about him is he has an arm slot way up here. So his release point, he has the highest release point in all of minor league baseball last time I looked, among guys who we have Savant data for. How much, you know, do we have an idea of like how much runway just being unusual and being funky, like is there a time at which that wears out and people, okay, we've seen it, you gotta give something else?
Yeah, I think about that a lot because Paul Sewald, you know, BioModels had like great stuff, and he's exactly what we're talking about, where he like had a weird funky release point and a weird fastball that came off that, and it seemed like, you know, especially, you know, when he was in the playoffs or late in the season, it seemed like the second or third time people saw him in a series, they were like, okay, I got this now, you know. And so I do wonder if there is, I think that's why I like velo too. You know, it's like, okay, the funk will work, but if it's funk with 90, you're just putting so much pressure on the funk. But if it's funk with 95, now we're talking.
You know, I wanted to change or switch gears a little bit here. You were part of a...
I thought you were going to make a change-up pun.
Oh. Do you want to make the change?
No,
of pun?
No, okay. You go right ahead.
I'm not big on puns usually, unless they are unintended. But we wanted to talk to you about the trade deadline big board that you were part of with The Athletic. Just to start, I'm wondering how difficult that endeavor is in a season like this, where it's still so murky. We have no idea who is going to be a seller, who is going to be a buyer. How much did that add to the process of constructing a big board?
Oh, it's super hard. I mean, we had, I think our number one was somebody I was like, he's not getting traded.
Jaron Duran.
Yeah, and I'm like, yeah, I don't think he's getting traded. I mean, the difficulty there is that, like, he's under team control for a while, but also he's a 28-year-old corner outfielder that just had, like, a peak year. So I don't, from what I've heard, teams cannot agree with the Red Sox on his value in the first place. So that's one thing. But then on top of it, like, do they have to make that deal after having made the Devers deal? You know, why would they necessarily want to trade somebody that they have under team control for a while? So that was one. Another one was we put Freddie Peralta in, and he's on the Brewers. And, you know, we had some rubric that was like, at the time, it was like 30%. If you were 30% to make the playoffs or less, then your players were eligible for this board. Well, now the Brewers have a 57% chance of making the playoffs. And even when I wrote it, I was like, I don't think the Brewers are selling. And then you get the ones that you just really don't know. Like the Cardinals are at 49% to make the playoffs. But, you know, do you get a vibe that they're going to, you know, like really push their chips in hard? And then you have a team like the Rangers who, you know, if they decide to sell, people will be like, yes, please. You have pitching. We need pitching. And they're like stumbling around right now near 500 with a 20% chance to make the playoffs. So, I mean, you know, I've been trying to put Jake DeGrom on every team in baseball just because I can't imagine, the Blue Jays rotation with DeGrom at the front or, the Cubs rotation. I just think that would be the biggest impact arm, that could potentially change, but we didn't even have him on the big board because I think at the time the Rangers had a better percentage to make the playoffs. So it's just really hard to figure out who's buyers and sellers. And then there's like the teams that you know are sellers, the White Sox, the Marlins, the Athletics. There's not that much there anymore.
Yeah, that's always the toughest part is like, yep. Yeah, the teams that you know are out. So I'm scoreboard watching and being like, Diamondbacks need to lose. Diamondbacks need to lose. We need these guys to hit the market. You mentioned the Marlins there, though, and one of the more fascinating names is Sandy Alcantara. So he was number four on that list. I know you had written about him a couple weeks prior with Ken Rosenthal as well. And he's coming off this injury and the stuff still looks good, but the location's wonky. And he's owed money beyond this year, but not a ton of money, like $17 million next year with a $2 million buyout the year after is not that much if he bounces back reasonably. What do you think, like, if Alcantara is available, what do you think a reasonable ask is on behalf of Miami? Like, are they a money dumping mode, or is the name value enough that you still got to give up prospect capital? How do you see that one shaking out?
I think at this point he has found the command that was missing. And since the stuff has been mostly there, the sinker and the change are not quite as good as they were before, but I think he's still maybe what you'd call like a back end one, maybe a two. I mean, that's still probably the best arm to move at the deadline, even in his reduced state. And, because I'm pessimistic that somebody like DeGrom moves. Mm-hmm. And so you're comparing him to, do you want Zach Gallen or Merrill Kelly or Tyler Mahle? You know, those types are more likely to move, but I consider them closer to like 3-4s. And this all matters because if you're setting up your postseason rotation, are they in it, the postseason rotation, or are they not? And Sandy is still one that's in it. So I think it'll actually cost some prospects. I don't know if it'll cost, your best prospect, but it'll cost, probably multiple young arms that are maybe far away. They can handle, the Florida can take guys that are further away, or, I think it'll take some prospects.
Yeah. So there's a chance is what you're saying for us.
Yeah, he's gettable. Yeah, he's totally gettable.
And the starter rank is so interesting, whereas like the Blue Jays, the rotation hasn't done that well like as a fivesome this year. But yeah, if you're talking wild card series, which is what it looks like, Jays, are you bumping Barrios, Bassett, or Gausman out of a wild card game? Or Max Scherzer, if things go well and he stays healthy. And your willingness to pay as the Blue Jays changes dramatically if the answer to that is yes or probably not.
Yeah, which leads me to sort of a weird one for you, but now that we know that Max Scherzer came out of that first start and the thumb seems to be okay, he is scheduled to start again here against the Yankees. Do you have in mind sort of what your expectations would be for a guy like that, for a Max Scherzer in this rotation?
Yeah, one thing that's really interesting is that for a pitcher that's coming off of injury, the first game back, his velocity actually is predictive of his whole season. Mm-hmm. You get a lot of information right away from the radar gun. What we got was 93.2, which was better than he did, better than the sitting velocity last year with Texas. Kind of harkens back a little bit more to 2023 when he managed a 3.77 ERA and was a pretty good pitcher. So I think he's definitely capable of being an above average pitcher. I would take Sandy over him, I think, in a playoff series, and I might take him over Barrio. So that's why I think I know he's been pitching well. It's just I'm a stuff guy. I think Sandy's got that stuff. So I think it's worth it. But you're right. If they don't think it's worth it, then Max is pitching well, then it's just a question of, do we get maybe a lesser pitcher just to replace Bowden Francis for a while and just get us to the playoffs? So that's what's staring at the Blue Jays right now. But I think Max is fine. I think as long as that thumb stays in place, he's going to be pretty good.
As far as bullpen options go, the Angels are maybe too good right now. They're one spot out of the wild card. They're another one of those teams. But the kicker name on your list was Reed Detmers, who I've been fascinated by for a long time because it seemed like the Angels had broke him, and then they moved him to the bullpen when a lot of us thought he should be a starting caliber guy. And still the 4.21 ERA, but a lot to like under the hood. He kind of one of the more interesting under-the-radar relief options if the Angels slide out of it for you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's got a legit slider, and the move to the bullpen has made his fastball way better. He's definitely somebody I would acquire as a reliever. I like David Bednar in Pittsburgh, too. That's probably more brand name, more top of the market. But I believe that he's figured out the control problems he's had, and he's a closer level guy.
Yeah, 35% strikeout rate, to under a 7% walk rate now for Bednar. So, and the ERA is back down sub-3. So it took a AAA stint, but he seems to have figured it back out. Before we let you go here, curious. So you wrote this piece a couple of weeks back about the ball not flying out as much and the suggestion that maybe the ball is a little different, the drag coefficient's a little different. In the month or so since then, what's the feedback that you've gotten from either from players or the league side about where that's at right now?
Yeah, the league is just doesn't know why. Drag is up on the most it's ever been. And that means that we're missing about 3 or 4 feet on batted balls that are 330 feet. So there's some warning track balls there that should have been homers. The reason we haven't seen it in the overall offensive numbers has been a question, because overall offensive numbers are okay, is because batters are now hitting the ball harder than they used to. And I think this is partially because now we're tracking these things. We know exit velocity. Now we know bat speed. So there's more teams training for bat speed. So there's more people hitting the ball harder. So, that's been one thing. Another thing that I've got heard, you know, I'm plugged into a lot of research and development departments, and there were people were like, hey, our catcher used to have great framing numbers. Like, thank you for writing this piece, because now they're not as great framing numbers. And, you know, we were trying to figure out why, and now we know why, because the strike zone is smaller. the strike zone is smaller, and then they were like, you know, we were wondering why this hitter wasn't hitting as hard, and like, yeah, the ball has more drag on it. So these things that are happening behind the scenes, like, they may not seem like that big a deal from fans' side, because you're like, oh, yeah, well, offense about the same, you know, whatever. The strike zone's a little bit smaller, who cares? But when you're like an analyst and you have to know the true talent of players, you have to know what they're playing with, you know, what equipment they're playing with and like what strike zone they're playing with. And so, you know, I think that's actually a really frustrating thing around the game, is that like I've had a lot of executives be like, every year with this crap. Like every year we have to show up and like, what ball do we get this year? What strike zone do we get this year? So
I'm trying to imagine the basketball sort of equivalent of like, you show up in the 3-point line's like 6 inches further away one day. And it's, I know baseball has that with the dimensions park to park already, but yeah, it's a fascinating one.
Football did have that deflate gate.
Yeah. There you go. See, we worked in football. We've worked in every sport to this show now today. Eno, thanks so much for doing this, man.
What if there is some team in basketball that's just like deflated the basketball? Just
a little bit.
Deflating, no, but I have thought before like how cool it would be, or how interesting it would be anyway, if basketball teams were allowed to like slightly change the court dimensions like baseball teams can. Where like if you're the peak Golden State Warriors era, you move the 3-point line back so only Steph Curry can hit threes, like stuff like that. All right. Thanks so much for doing this, man. Really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Eno Saris of The Athletic, of Rates and Barrels. You can check it out every day on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts, with our pal Derek Van Riper, Trevor May, Jed Lowry. Although Jed was a little more down on the Blue Jays in the American League wildcard this week than maybe Derek was. So,
well, it's okay. This is a statement series. It's coming up right here.
It is. It is. And Jed's a big run differential guy. So that 15-1 game, no good. All right. Jays Yankees tonight. A little bit of a programming note, because as we have mentioned, it is also the beginning of free agency for basketball and for hockey. Basketball that can get underway at 6 p.m. today. It's a new league year. Hockey gets underway tomorrow. So tomorrow we will still be on, but we're only going to be on 10 to 11. Mm-hmm. The Jays play at 3 o'clock. We'll be on Sportsnet 360 and Sportsnet Plus. But if you listen on the radio, you'll have to go to sportsnet.ca/590 or the Sportsnet app to hear us, because it is signing season. The Fan Morning Show will be on 6 to 9 as usual. JD Bunkus will be on 9 to 11. The Fan Hockey Show 11 to 1. Real Kipper and Bourne 1 to 3. So we got you covered kind of wall to wall on 590 for free agency. And then we'll be 10 to 11. The Blue Jays game is at 3 p.m. Blair and Barker will have you for post-game Jays talk as usual. So not a ton changing other than we lose our second hour. And if you're looking for us on radio, you got to go to the alt stream at sportsnet.ca/590. Gonna be a fun series. I'm very fired up for this. Carlos Rodon against Max Scherzer and Max Fried against Kevin Gausman. Like, what a two pitching matchups to start this
thing
off.
What else could you hope for? What a Canada Day matchup that is going to be. I expect a full house for the series.
I would think so. I mean, the Yankees are usually a pretty safe bet anyway, but particularly Jays are playing well. The weather's nice. I mean, I haven't seen outside since 7 o'clock this morning, but The weather seemed nice.
It did seem nice. I think it's going to rain a little bit later in the afternoon.
How dare
you? I'm so sorry. Yeah, we're finally done here, and then it's going to rain.
Why would you do that? Why would you do that? It's your fault. This is on you. Eno Saris and Keith McPherson, thank you so much for joining us. Thanks to Nick Blackmore, Jake Schulz, and Jennifer Rolnick behind the glass. It will be Ben, Chris, and Show for the game for you on radio. Jamie and Caleb on Blue Jay Central. Dan, Joe, Hazel, and Emily on the television broadcast for you. We will be back tomorrow, 10 to 11 a.m., to break it all down. Maybe there's some Raptors stuff today. It doesn't sound like it, but it's the start of free agency, so I'm full on. My fingers will stay attached to the laptop the rest of the day. Hope you all have a wonderful Monday. And if this is a holiday for you today and tomorrow, enjoy it. Be safe. Get some sun or rain.